Greetings, greetings, everyone. And welcome to Here and Now. Wherever here is for you. And in this moment, we happen to be sharing on this planet in this moment together. So our first day of practicing together in this context of an online metta retreat. So I'd like to share a few reflections today. Which might be appropriate for a first day of a metta retreat. So you might have had the thought already today, oh, this is great, I'm happy to be here. Or maybe you've had many thoughts of, what am I doing? What have I signed up for? 7 days of what? Metta? This loving kindness thing? Was I out of my mind? These kinds of thoughts arise. It's okay. No worries. Be kind to them. Don't believe them, but be kind to them. So I'd like to say a few words about why metta? Why metta? The W's of metta, perhaps I want to discuss a little bit today. Of course, we'll talk more about them as the week goes on, but why metta, the why, and a little bit of how, to flesh it out a little more, and how, why, what. And the when is always, the W of the when is always, and that's another thing I'll talk about later, because some of you have asked for invitations, for recommendations about what to do as you need to, for example, interact with family members or maybe go in and out of the container a bit. Maybe you have medical appointments, and maybe just a few words about how to bring the spirit of metta to that. So metta. What is metta? Well, it's this word, M-E-T-T-A in Pali, is translated as I mentioned earlier, as loving kindness, which is this funky, weird, hyphenated word. We don't see it elsewhere in English. I like the translation of also, the translation of kindness, just kindness. But it does have a little bit of love in it, the unconditionality of love. So maybe just translate it as love, but not the kind of love that maybe usually Valentine's Day tends to celebrate at Hallmark, which is like, oh, this, I love you if you love me back, or this attachment, love with attachment, which actually is a near enemy. As we'll discuss later, the near enemies of metta, but kindness, or just unconditional love, friendliness, care, goodwill, warmth, benevolence, so many different nuances you might run into throughout the day as you're practicing. And don't push away any nuance, because towards particular person, particular time, maybe one nuance of metta will come up, and towards another being in a different time, or even the same being at a different time, a different nuance of metta comes up, and you'll get to explore all these nuances and varieties, variations of exploring kindness, metta, love towards others and towards yourself. Sometimes you might just show as acceptance. It's okay, sweetie. You're right. All right. Yeah, you're distracted. You feel like a hot mess right now. It's okay, darling. It's okay. That's metta. And sometimes it could be just a sense of, wow, seeing your own inner goodness for the first or for the nth time, and just marveling at this person who is you. Like, wow, this goodness, this kindness, and appreciating that sense of goodness with appreciation, with love. So there's so many different ways that this metta can come up for you. And if what I'm describing, like what, my own goodness, to marvel at that, what is she talking about? It's okay. Let yourself be surprised. Let yourself be surprised, trusting that there is goodness. Trusting there is goodness. And I'll say more about that too. So before we delve in, maybe I'd like to ask you, why are you here? Let's do a little bit of guided reflection together, just for a moment. And maybe as you're sitting in your chair, your cushion, maybe even close your eyes for a moment and just land in your body. Connecting with yourself, with this being who is you. I'm dropping in the question as if you're dropping a pebble into a pond, into a still pond. Dropping this question into your body, not into your head. Not to think about answers, but drop it into your body. Why am I here? What is my hope, my dream, my intention, my highest aspiration, my wish for myself, for this practice, for being here? Drop it in and listen to see what comes up. Maybe something, maybe nothing. It's okay. Why am I here? No right, no wrong answers. Be curious. Bowing to whatever came up. Setting it free. Dropping in the question one more time. Into your body. Into your heart. Why am I here? It's my highest intention. Drop it in and just listen. Listen for what comes up. Again, maybe something, maybe nothing. Why am I here? Bowing to whatever came up, even if it's nothing. And Tatiampi, for the third time, dropping in the question, dropping it in to your body. Let yourself be surprised. Again, nothing might come up. It's okay. Why am I here? Why am I here on this retreat, on this metta retreat? What is my heart's wish? In my heart of heart. And bowing to that too. Before you open your eyes, remember, as if you have this keepsake. If you could put it, this answer, even if it's nothing, silence came up, let it be a question mark. If you could put it in a little locket, imaginary locket, a heart-shaped locket. Put it in there and keep it close to your heart as if you're wearing it. And the golden thread around your neck, close to your heart. Remember your intention. Remember your intention. Because in those moments, if the question comes up, oh, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? You can just open this locket and remind yourself why you're here, why you're doing this, especially in those moments when going gets tough. And on every retreat, there are moments of ease and there are difficult moments. It's all okay. All part of the unfolding of the path. You're welcome to open your eyes if you wish, or you can continue to listen with your eyes closed to this, to these reflections, to the Dharma talk. It's all okay. See what serves your heart best. So remember your intention. Why are you here? So, how did the teaching of metta come about? Maybe I'll speak a little historically. Many of you might have heard the story of how supposedly it came about. But listen to the story again with beginner's mind. See if there's something in there that might touch you right now in this moment in time, a little differently than usual. So it is said that the Buddha first taught loving kindness meditation as an antidote to fear. And the legend is that he sent a group of monks off to meditate in a forest that was inhabited by tree spirits. And the tree spirits in the forest resented the monks' presence, so they decided to scare them away. They transformed themselves into ghoulish visions, made terrible shrieking sounds, and created awful smells. And the monks, terrified, fled the forest. They came back to the Buddha and said, please, please, they begged, please send us anywhere to meditate, any forest, but not that one. They were just terrified. The Buddha, having a sense of humor and wisdom, said, I'm going to send you back to that very same forest, but I'm going to give you the only protection you're going to need. And the only protection the Buddha gave them was the first ever teaching of metta. And the monks were encouraged to recite the metta phrases, but more importantly, to actually feel them in the heart in the practice of loving kindness. So in this story, the monks go back to the forest and they practice diligently. They practice metta diligently. And the tree spirits are so moved by the energy of loving kindness that generated and permeated from the monks that not only they stopped after a while, they stopped scaring them, but they decided they quite liked the monks after all. And they decided to serve them, to protect them, to protect them. So this story has a happy ending, this parable, and whether it's literally true or not, there's a teaching here for us that a mind that is filled with fear, a mind that is penetrated, filled with fear, whether it's real, whether it's imagined, the tree spirits are real or imagined, when that mind is met, is penetrated by the quality of loving kindness, little by little by little, the quality of that mind, that heart, gets transformed, is shifted. It becomes filled with kindness, permeating with safety. So safety, fear. In fact, as I mentioned safety, I'd like to say a couple of words about the phrases of metta. In fact, the first one, the traditional ones, the four that Diana and myself and Tanya have offered today. May you be safe. May I be safe. The first one having to do with safety. May you be safe from inner and outer harm. Second, having to do with physical, with mental happiness. May you be happy and joyful. The third one, physical well-being. May you be healthy and strong. May you have ease in your life. May you take care of yourself happily. So, and sometimes some teachers actually change the order of these phrases. I've noticed when I started to practice actually a couple of decades ago now, the way that I had first heard them was the "May you be happy" as the first phrase. And then later, I noticed actually the safety phrase is first. I mean, first it made sense to me. Oh yeah, happiness. Yeah, that's what's important. That one. Let's lead with the happy thing. That's what I want to lead with. Yeah, safety, whatever. That'll be fourth. I'll make that one fourth or third. And then later, as I was becoming more engaged and more curious about the teachings, I looked it up and, oh, actually the safety was traditionally the first one. So I switched it to be the first for me. And what I discovered as I continued to practice, and especially practicing on, you know, the month-long retreat when I devoted it to metta, I discovered that safety really is paramount, is the first thing. If you don't feel safe, you can't feel happy and healthy and, you know, ease. You can't, there's a sense of safety, that there needs to be a sense of psychological safety internally, which also aligns with some of the Western psychological research on, say, Bowlby's attachment theory with children, that safety for children, feeling safe, feeling this psychological safety with their mother, it provides such a fundamental basic sense of sense that needs to be there, that then other layers are built on top of it, like the various hierarchical the hierarchical buildings of say social and moral and psychological development. Safety really is first. So may I be safe, may you be safe. And then the long form, from inner and outer harm. And the inner harm makes so much sense to me. It lit up like, well, most of the harm that I'm caused in the world is not so much from the outside, is from, guess what? Me, the inner harm I caused myself with all the second arrows that I caused myself. I bludgeon myself with the second arrows. I'm causing all this inner harm. May I be safe from inner and outer harm. And again, fully knowing, as I mentioned earlier in the light guidance this morning, fully knowing that there is no complete safety from outer harm. Accidents happen. disasters, natural disasters happen. So when we wish for safety, either for ourselves or for others, it's a gift. It's an offering. It's not said. It's not a blessing with attachment. You know, when you give a blessing, you bless someone with it or yourself with these wishes of metta. Ah, may you be safe. You're doing them for the cultivation of your own heart, not with some, oh gosh, I'm going to wish them safety and well, and then I'm going to call them right at the end of the retreat. Okay, are you well? Are you happy? Are you safe now? Did it all happen to you? So there is no magical thinking with metta. I trust you know this. And yet it does come up on every retreat. So it's not about magical thinking. It's about the cultivation of your own heart, of your own mind. May I be safe. May you be safe, happy, healthy, and have ease. So there are a list of benefits of metta listed in Anguttara Nikaya 11.16. So there are 11 benefits of metta, it is said. 11 benefits of practicing metta. And many of them you can actually witness for yourself. And some maybe not readily. I'll go through them. So the first one being, you will sleep easily. They said that you will sleep easily. I like this one. I can attest to this one, practicing metta. You will wake easily. Gift number two. Gift number three, you will have pleasant dreams. And this makes sense too, right? If your mind is pervading with kindness, with goodness, with beauty, it'll also permeate through your sleep, through your dreams. The fourth one, it is said that people will love you. People will love you. That makes sense too, right? Conventionally, if you are have a heart of kindness, if you're a kind being, if you're permeating sense of goodwill, oh, people will like you. They will change. They will feel different in your presence. So not to say that, okay, do love and kindness so that people will like you, but these are spiritual goodies. We don't do metta because of the spiritual goodies, but this is what the suttas say. The fifth one, devas and animals will love you. Devas are celestial beings or angels in the Buddhist cosmology. Number six, devas will protect you. The angels, the celestial beings will protect you. It's a sweet thought. I like that. I like to think that. Number seven, I wouldn't quite try this out. So don't try this at home, but here we go. Number seven, external dangers such as poisons, weapons, and fire will not harm you. That would be nice, but I wouldn't try it. Again, I like to think that along with devas being protecting us, but you know, don't try it at home. Number eight, your face will be radiant. Yeah, this one, I like this, right? This makes sense. Again, if you have a sense of kindness, warmth, safety, happiness, well-being that's radiating, even if there's no well-being in your body, but there's well-being in your heart, yes, your face will be radiant. Your mind will be serene. Yes, I can attest to this one. Your mind will be serene. Of course, of course. Instead of neurotic thoughts going through our minds over and over again. Yeah, thoughts of loving kindness, goodness, beauty can support, can help us be serene. Number 10, This one I don't know yet. You will die unconfused. So I'll let you know. Maybe we can all try this. And then number 11, you will be reborn in happy realms. You will be reborn in happy realms. So some of these benefits, again, the spiritual goodies, we don't practice metta necessarily. I mean, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with also practicing for the goodnesses. I guess similarly, I would say there are some other quote unquote spiritual goodies that somehow parallel, in some way parallel, this list of 11. And they're from various scientific studies that have been done, from studying loving kindness, metta meditation, and compassion meditation. So turns out that, well, not surprisingly, of course, it's just, you know, science measuring the same thing in a controlled environment, as controlled as possible, knowing that double blind is not possible with these studies anyway. So there are a lot of weaknesses. Many of them are small. They can't be double blind, et cetera, et cetera. And nevertheless, study by Friedrichsen et al. In 2008, it was a landmark study, that impact of 7 weeks of loving kindness meditation, it increased feelings of love, joy, contentment, gratitude, hope, interest, amusement, and awe. It increased life satisfaction, the perceived quality of life. It reduced depressive symptoms. And it also decreased illness symptoms and increased purpose in life and perceived social support, right? This is kind of like the list of 11. These are like, wow, this is kind of nice, spiritual goodies. Kindness makes you happy, and happiness makes you kind. It's the virtuous cycle. It's one of the lines from the study. Another study, another, I think, couple of studies about resilience, stress, and the immune response with the 6 weeks compassion meditation. When at the end they did the Trier social stress test, they noticed that there was lower blood cortisol level, and also the behavioral responses, the mood of the people who had participated in the 6 weeks of this compassion meditation, which is similar to metta, was higher. And they also found out that it's dose dependent. So what does dose dependent mean? The more people practice, the more these changes in their stress and immune response were noticeable. So for them, it was maybe once a week or once, oh, sorry, the practices were once a day for maybe half hour. I forget now exactly how long they did. And here we are immersing ourselves for the entire week, the entire week, sitting, walking, moving, eating. So it's quite lovely. Bunch of other studies, I won't go through them all, but there's also a sense of increased social connection. There's more positive emotions, as I mentioned. There's also increased empathetic response and decreased implicit bias towards the social outgroup, which I think is actually a fantastic result, given how implicit bias can creep in. And for all of us, how metta decreases that. Also, evidence that it reduces self-criticism, self-judgment. As I mentioned earlier, I think maybe it was today or last night, self-judgment. So metta is also the antidote to self-judgment. And self-judgment, guess what, are correlated with depression, with depressive symptoms. So by practicing metta, the depressive symptoms decreased, and positive emotions increased, and in this practice, the results, the change, the difference was maintained 3 months afterwards. So send us a note 3 months after this retreat. Tell us how you're doing. Also, with pain, there was a reduction in migraine pain, in chronic migraines, as well as back pain. That was another study by Carson et al. In 2005. And it wasn't just the pain decreasing. In some cases, it was pain decreasing. And there's a lot of studies with this. But it's actually the relationship to pain changed. So there might still be pain, but subjects are no longer angry or in distress about the pain. There's ease with the pain. And I can attest to that. I've had a chronic condition and a lot of pain chronic pain. And with practice and metta and compassion have been my go-to. And many, when things become very challenging, and the pain, the challenges physically can still be there, but the relationship to them changes. It becomes lighter. It becomes easier. It can all be there. The pain can still be there without bothering you, without bothering me. It can just be here. And the definition of freedom is when we can have freedom in the midst of challenge, in the midst of difficulty. It's not that awakening, nibbana, ta-ta, we're on top of the hill and no more challenges, no more difficulty. No, there'll always be waves on the ocean. But can we have ease? Can we have freedom in the midst of the waves? And loving kindness is together with insight practice, as ways to open us up to more and more freedom. And to say, actually, loving kindness itself alone can support our awakening, can support us having a different relationship with what is presented to us. So aside from all these benefits, you know, where there's the list of 11 or the psychological benefits, and et cetera, we can think of those as conventional reasons. And then, of course, there are post-conventional, relational, and I would say universal reasons to practice metta, to practice the post-conventional reasons. So one consideration is for us, as we come back to our humanity, to this being who is myself, being this impermanent, short-lived being who yet has agency in this life, in this world, who do you want to be? Who do you want to be? What kind of a world do you want to leave behind? What kind of a world do you want to live in? And what imprint do you want to leave behind? What kind of world do you want to live in, and what kind of imprint to leave behind? So aside, you know, letting go from the intellectual reasons that metta is good for you, you know, it's kind of like the doctor model. And the Buddha was in some suttas, it is, you know, it is said that he, you know, dukkha and suffering is an illness, and he was a doctor, gave them medicine. So that model of the medical model is within Buddhism. And yet, giving, letting go of that, it's good for you, practice is good for you, which gets a little bit too psychologically, I don't know, just doing it because it's good for me, or good for others. Letting that go for a moment. Practicing metta has the potential to change who we are, who you are, and who you become more aligned with your values in this life. It is often said that and people who have worked with the dying report that one of the regrets, if there are regrets at the end, is, you know, I wish I had been more engaged, more loving, more generous, more kind to others. I like this quote from Jack Kornfield, The Path with Heart. And he says that if you have the privilege to sit with the dying, and usually at the end, they don't say how much is on my bank account and what did I build? But the questions are simple. Did I love well? Did I live fully? Did I learn to let go? What kind of a world do we want to live in? So this practice has profound impact on our experience of the world as we fashion it. Whether we experience it as friendly or unfriendly, in fact, our perception creates the world for ourselves as well as others. That's a pretty radical statement. Like Vinnie Ferraro, a friend and colleague who says, just see if you can approach every moment with kindness. Do you know what that does? That allows you to live in a kind world. That allows you to live in a kind world. Approaching every moment with kindness. So the world becomes a friendly place. As our perception towards the world changes, the world feels like a friendly place, and the way we approach it, the way we live it, it impacts other people. So it's not just for us, it's out of service for others. It's out of service for others also. Byron Katie, who teaches, and is famous for this phrase, teaching this phrase, loving what is. And she says, you may not like it, but love it. And which makes sense to me. I'll say a few more words about it in a moment. But this quote from her that I love, she says, I'm a lover of what is, not because I'm a spiritual person, but because it hurts when I argue with reality. It hurts when I argue with reality. And reality always wins. So the sense of loving what is, you may not like it, but can you love it? Can you open up to it? There's a sense of different way of being, this different perspective. And as we fashion a different way of being towards ourselves, towards others, and the world, fashion a new being, a new pattern of being. As the Buddha says, hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone it is healed. This is an ancient and eternal law. So cultivating kindness, cultivating love for our own sake, for the sake of others, generationally, for the sake of generations. So it feels so important. It's not just for us. So it might, even if it has occurred to you, oh, this feels so selfish. I'm taking 7 days and I'm imbuing my mind in kindness. And I'm spending plenty of time, which we will, with loving kindness for myself, compassion for myself. Gosh, this feels so self-centered. It is not. It absolutely isn't. It's the biggest gift we can give to the world is our love and self-compassion, self-love, as we'll talk more about it, is the basis of loving others, is the basis. If your cup isn't full, if you don't fill your own cup first with love, you're going to go around the world. You're going to go around and say, love me, love me, love me, fill my cup in all your relationships, fill my cup, neediness, needy, needy. Whereas if your cup is filled, there's a sense of, yes, I love and accept myself. Yep. There are some peculiarities, and I'm doing my best. I love and accept myself just as I am. Your cup becomes full. So self-care, self-compassion, self-metta isn't selfish, something that we do so that then our cup can overfloweth to others, love others unconditionally. They may not love us back. That's fine. Our cup is full. It's okay. It's really okay. It's really fine. There's a sense of radical generosity that can arise. So, in terms of pedagogy, maybe I'll say something here too. You know, there's this idea that love, goodness, kindness is our true nature, as I mentioned, is really true. It's already here, the same way that in Mahayana it is said that awakening is already here. It's already here. Whereas the vision of, well, okay, we're going to keep cultivating this metta, this goodness, so that we become it. We're really a lousy person and we're not really loving, but we're just going to keep saying these phrases until it penetrates, and yeah, maybe we'll get. So I'm dramatizing a little bit for effect. Humor me. And yet, I think the point I'm trying to make here is that the idea of polishing a stone, the idea of polishing a stone, that it's already bright, it's already good, seeing the goodness within, seeing the goodness that is inside. Because often we don't see the goodness that we already have. We see ourselves worse than we actually are. And also pedagogically, what I have witnessed, what I have seen, supporting, I think by now, thousands of practitioners with the belief, with the trust that it's already here and we're polishing the stone, polishing the stone. It can be more supportive to our practice. It can be more supportive. And I fully believe, and I've had experiences, and there's a lot more I can actually bring here, and maybe I will later in the week, that there is so much inner goodness and inner beauty. It is our birthright. Goodness, kindness. And there are some studies that suggest this, also suggest with babies and evolutionary studies, etc., if you wanted to put that hat on for a moment. The sense of this inner goodness, inner beauty is already here, polishing the stone, and trusting it's already here. It just makes it easier. It's not like, oh, I'm climbing a mountain of metta and I'm just going to build it brick by brick, this house of metta. No, it's already here. It's already here. I'm just uncovering what's already here. What's already here. So see what perspective might be supportive for you. I'm just sharing my experience and what I've discovered from both practicing, sharing, discovering. And again, we can be pedagogical within particular teachings, particular studies, and yet what is helpful? What is helpful here? What is helpful? So the Buddha said, whatever you frequently think and ponder upon, that will become the inclination of your mind. Whatever you frequently think and ponder upon, that will become the inclination of your mind. So if we frequently think and ponder upon thoughts of kindness, loving kindness, that becomes the inclination of our mind. Whether you're have the image of polishing the stone or walking on the path, it's who you will become. It will become the tendencies, just the way you think and feel and react. And it's also the impact, the imprint that we leave in the world. There's these five contemplations, five daily contemplations from Anguttara Nikaya 557. And one having to do with our actions, with our karma, our actions, that, you know, we inherit our actions, that our actions are our mother, or literally our actions are our womb that we take birth from. Our actions are our family. Our actions are our protections and our arbitrator. So many different ways to think of our actions, and how do we want our actions to be imbued with kindness, so that as we do this practice of loving kindness, it imbues our actions, it imbues our mind, and it imbues our actions in the world as the imprint, as the reverberations that we leave in the world. So how? A little about the how and the time that we have left. So to think that, to consider that, we're not fabricating metta or these feelings of kindness, that we're tapping into what's already there, what's already here. We all know kindness. We all know kindness. That this it's a cultivation. It's a cultivation. It's a drop by drop by drop filling the cup. It's seed by seed by seed that we're planting. And we may not see right away. We might actually be in a very grumpy mood and we're just still hanging in there gently, gently. Is it there yet? Am I kinder now? Do I feel better? Like we're checking our watch every 5 minutes. Patience, patience. So tapping into the feelings of care and warmth and goodwill that are already here and cultivating, not forcing, but cultivating. And in the case that where you're grumpy, by the way, maybe in that case, the kindest thing to do in that moment is to turn the metta around and hold yourself. Sort of, may you be happy. Like it's not happening. You're forcing it. Like, okay, this is not working. Sorry. Oh, sweetheart. May you feel at peace, darling. Gosh, you are grumpy right now. You're really suffering. This is hard. May you be at ease. May I be at ease. So whatever is arising, to meet that with kindness, not forcing what seems hard. And we practice metta. We start with what is easy, as Diana said, where it's really easy. And we go through the ever-widening circles, these concentric circles. And also to say, again, see, there's something about how it is taught in the suttas, or traditionally, in the commentaries, how it's taught and how we teach it in the West. So I want to also bring that out too, because what we've discovered is that we often start with the easy being, with the dear being, the category that's easy. Whereas pedagogically in the commentaries, etc., start with self. The first category is self. And then we go to the benefactor, then good friend, then neutral person, then difficult person, and then all beings. Those are the categories. Whereas what we found in the West is that self sometimes is harder for Westerners. Like, okay, we need to prime the pump a little bit. You just kind of get it going. And what's easier sometimes is to start with a friend or benefactor. We kind of clump those together usually on shorter retreats, especially make it into an easy category. We start there where it's flowing. And when it's flowing, then we do the bait and switch. Okay, now we bring in yourself. And I'm going to hang out there for a couple of days. So, just so you know that's coming up. And enjoy the metta for yourself as it comes up tomorrow. And then there is the formal and the informal practice, the phrases, the tapping to the feelings, sensations, middle of the chest, And also, as we'll say more about this later, can be a concentration or a samatha practice. And maybe I'll leave that for another talk. I'll say more about it later. So trust that you're planting seeds. Planting seeds even if nothing is happening. And if nothing is happening, and I've seen this for myself, I've seen this for so many practitioners who practice for a long time. And at first they say, I felt like nothing was happening. And, you know, and or they maybe, I remember one practitioner saying, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm an SOB. Like they didn't have a very good image of themselves. And then they came back on a retreat, like, I'm kinder, I'm nicer. Like, I don't know what's happening here. I'm just nicer and kinder to myself and to other people. Like, what's up with this? As if, yes, of course you're planting seeds of kindness. That's what's going to flower. And there's a great story by Sharon Salzberg that the first time, and Sharon Salzberg, as many of you might already know, is the American Buddhist teacher who basically brought loving kindness and popularized it. She has this great story that the first time she did a metta retreat on her own, she had got the teachings from her teachers, and then she was doing it on her own. She spent a week, and she said it was the most. She found the whole endeavor excruciatingly boring. And then the day she stopped and then left the retreat, she drops a jar, which shattered all over the floor. Instead of a stream of self-recriminations, her immediate response was quite simple. You're really a klutz, but I love you anyway. So she thought, wow, something did happen after all. And those planting those seeds in that excruciatingly boring week. So trust you're planting seeds, even if nothing seems to be happening, like you wasted the whole week, like just doing this retreat thing. Trust. Yeah. So the invitation I have is to practice metta with grace. GRACE. This is an acronym that I have come up with. So G is for gentleness. Be gentle with yourself. Don't force. It doesn't seem appropriate to do this particular category right now. If you're hurting, turn it around. Be gentle. The G is overloaded. It also stands for gradual cultivation. So both gentleness and gradual cultivation. It's not an overnight practice. It takes time. Be steady. Be patient. The R of grace stands for receive. Receive and relax. Receive and relax. The relax is easy. It doesn't need explanation. Well, it may not be easy, but it doesn't need no explanation. So let your body be relaxed. If your body is really tight, may you be well. That's the sign that something is a little off. May I be well. You're bracing yourself. Relax. Bring gentleness to the body. And the receive is receiving metta is just as important as giving metta. And we'll talk more about that tomorrow. Tomorrow morning as I share some guidance instructions. Receiving of metta is just as important as giving it to others. And for some of us, receiving is harder. It's like, whoa, deer in headlights. No, not me. No, it's like too much, but learning to receive is a platform, is really building that foundation for giving. The A, so we have G, gentleness, gradual cultivation. R, receive, relax. A is for arrive every moment and accept, because acceptance is love. So it's arrive and accept. Arriving every moment. Every moment is a new arrival. You might have been gone the past, whatever, 10 minutes in a fantasy. It's okay. Arrive again. This is a new moment. This is a new minute for practice. Arrive. Keep arriving. Keep arriving in the body. Keep arriving. We keep mentioning the body, Diana and I and Tanya. The body is so important. The body is so important. Keep arriving. Keep arriving. Otherwise, it can become a heady practice. And accept whatever is arising. What's arising in this moment? Can you accept what is? Can you accept that, okay, right now I'm trying to cultivate kindness towards my friend, but I just remembered this fight we had 20 years ago, and I hadn't thought about that fight. I'm like, and I'm all angry, and I shouldn't be, and I'm on a metta retreat, and I want to be kind, and darn it, I'm no good, and this is terrible. It's like, it's okay, sweetie. Accept. This is what needs to come up. This is what needs to be purified right now. The purity, the purification and purity cycles. Purification, challenges arising. You sit with them with kindness. It's okay. This is what needs to be here. Then purity cycles. When the mind is really clear, when it's really calm, it's steady. It's like, wow, this is sweet. This is where it's at. But no, both the purity and purification cycles go together. But then again, don't try to push it. It's like, okay, I haven't had any emotions for a whole day. Maybe that means I'm not really practicing metta. No, no, no. Don't go fishing for purification cycles. It doesn't work that way again. If it finds you, open up to it. But don't go fishing for it, please. Accept whatever arises for you as the gift that needs to be here right now. C for continuity, 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 sitting, walking, moving, making yourself a meal with care, with love, going to your doctor's appointment. Can you be kind? Can you not make it more difficult for yourself? Can you be kind to the people who are around you? Can you smile at them and say hi as an extension of your practice? You're taking your retreat container with you this week, everywhere you go, everywhere you go. And the different expressions, it might look differently for you wherever you are. It might mean you're silent. It might mean you're interacting. See what continuity means for you. Discover it for yourself. Explore. And lastly, E of grace, embodiment. As we've been saying, E is for embodiment. It's not heady. Keep being embodied. Keep being embodied. And lastly, the far enemy of metta. The far enemy is this beautiful language I like, is the commentary. The far enemy is the opposite. The opposite of metta is hate. That's pretty easy, right? Love and hate. When you hate someone, when there's ill will. The near enemy is basically something that masquerades as the real thing, but it's not the real thing. And the near enemy, the masquerader, is attachment to outcome. Either attaching to outcome or attaching to the person or some kind of attachment. So I love you if you love me back. I do metta for you, but you know, I want you to really be safe and healthy and happy, or myself, like, where's the outcome of this? So attachment, or love with attachment, not offering it as a free gift, but only if you're going to continue to be my partner. And like, that's the only way I'm going to do this. So metta is pure. It's unconditional. So who do you want to be? What kind of world do you want to live in? What imprint do you want to leave behind? Consider these questions, please. Dropping them in. Open your locket now and then around your heart. Why am I here? Why am I here? Let's just sit together for 30 seconds or so and let the words settle. hatred never ceases through hatred. By love alone is it healed. This is an ancient and eternal law. Thank you all. Thank you for your kind attention. And a reminder that at 7:15 tonight, there is a drop-in group. If you wish to come in, to ask questions, or just listen, you're welcome to. Okay. Take care.